So I didn't think this was going to be a series, but well, here we are in episode 2 of People Watching. So today we're, well, I'm talking about kinesthetic empathy, which is essentially when you take something you see in someone else's body and put it in yours to see what it feels like. A couple of business items before we dig into today's content. If you are listening to this and you haven't had the chance to listen to the People Watching 101 episode on observation, go back and check that out first. A key part of being able to access kinesthetic empathy is being able to see things in other people's bodies and understand what you are seeing. So it will be really helpful to listen to the observation episode first because I'm going to reference it today. Now is also probably a good time to mention that if you'd like to support my work, you can do that on Patreon, patreon.com/fieldguidetobodylanguage. I also try and keep the Facebook group page up to date with info about upcoming episodes and extra fun things and articles that I find. It's a public group, so please come and bring friends. Of course, there will be links to all of that in the show notes. Okay, so here's what's up. The next episode of the podcast is an interview with Dr. Deb Miller, and we have a great discussion about empathy. Dr. Miller wrote a book called More Than Sorry, 5 Steps to Deepen Your Apology After You've Committed Infidelity. She focuses a lot on empathy in her work, and I really feel like one of the most challenging situations to be empathetic in is when there's been infidelity in an intimate relationship. And so I was really grateful to have her take on empathy and how important and helpful it is. She has great insight, and we had a really lovely conversation. But because this is a body language podcast, in advance of publishing my discussion with Dr. Miller, I wanted to ground our thoughts on empathy in kinesthetic empathy or bodily empathy. Kinesthetic empathy is when you observe something in someone else's body and you put it in your body to see what it feels like, both physically and emotionally. And now y'all are like, okay, crazy woman, where do we even start with that? What do you mean see something in someone else's body? You're going to use your observation techniques to identify something unique in another's body or movement that you want to understand. If you haven't listened to the observation episode, it's the first People Watching episode, and I go through observation techniques in more depth. For today's purposes, though, let's just have a quick review. When you are observing, the first course of action is to decide the purpose of your observation. That's your why. Why are you here? Which literally might just be to find something to use to flex your kinesthetic empathy muscles. Then you'll decide whether you'll be an onlooker or a participant in the situation. Are you just watching, just observing, or are you observing and interacting in the situation? Then decide on the duration of your observation. How long are we stuck here? Is this a quick observation between bus stops, or is this an FBI-style stakeout? Also, if you're doing FBI-style stakeouts, you better be an investigative professional, otherwise that's creepy. Next, narrow your movement parameters. You can broadly narrow in on body, effort, shape, or space. Yes, I realize that broadly narrowing is an oxymoron, but hopefully you get the picture. You can choose one of the general categories of body, effort, shape, or space to easily narrow your movement parameters. When you are done observing, you can compare, contrast, or correlate to make sense of what you see. Today, since we're talking about kinesthetic empathy, we'll focus on comparing and contrasting. Correlating involves gathering more formal data than a casual people watching session provides. But when comparing and contrasting, you can use your kinesthetic empathy. And so making sense of what you see can be done in a more casual manner. If you make an informal comparison, you'll consider what you have observed and what your body already intrinsically knows. What do I mean by that? We all have movement preferences and complex movement histories written over the course of our lives that inform how we look at the movement of others. In my industry, we call this body knowledge and body prejudice. If we were to put on an anthropological lens, these would be our familial and societal norms. Some are formally taught. Others are observed and absorbed. Let me give you an example. If your mom put her hands on her hips and furrowed her brow every time she was angry with you while you were growing up, you would link her movements and accompanying emotions, and that would become part of your body knowledge and body prejudice. Then, if you went to the mall and saw a person put their hands on their hips and furrow their brow, because you have a memory of that movement and its paired emotion, you might compare what you saw at the mall with what you knew of that movement from your mother, and then assume that the person at the mall was angry. That is a snap judgment, using what your body already knows. There's some possibility of accuracy, but be open to other possibilities, because you are one person with one life experience, and what you are observing can't only be filtered through your life experience. If we use our kinesthetic empathy, our ability to try on the movements of others, we can gain more insight into what's actually going on. Just by spending a little bit more time and consideration with our observations, we can make the experience more rich. We can tap into more of what our body knows and gain a deeper understanding of what's going on. Once you have seen what the body is doing and maybe even assumed that position in your own body, you can observe the effort. How is that person moving? Is there a sharp rigidness in their body? Where are they being playful? If you add your effort observations, you'll have a more clear picture of what's actually going on. Maybe even a more clear feeling of what's going on would probably be a better way to say that. You might discover after spending time with your observations and putting those movements in your body that what you observed at the mall wasn't someone's anger as originally thought, but rather someone being playful or sarcastic. Another way of making sense of your observations is contrasting. This is something that is done very frequently in coaching. You look at a movement, compare it to what it should look like, and adjust accordingly. It doesn't sound like that process would involve kinesthetic empathy, but it can. As I've mentioned before, I am a Pilates instructor, and so I spend a fair bit of time adjusting the way my clients move. And one of the best tools that I have is my own body. Bodies are very complex, with layers upon layers of connection or disconnection. Sometimes what needs to be adjusted is very straightforward, and other times I am left completely mystified by what's going on. When I am at a loss and I can't easily see how to best adjust the body in front of me, I put their position or their movement in my body. I'll observe my client and think, okay, the hips are twisted a bit to the right. The rib cage is tilted to the left and back slightly, making the mid-left back pretty tense. The arch of the left foot is rolled in. The right shoulder's rolled forward, and that's putting a fair bit of tension on the right side of the neck. Once my body can feel all of that, everything that my client is currently feeling, it's much easier to organize my thoughts on how to fix it. I know how the exercises should feel because I practice all of them regularly, and I know what the client feels because I've used kinesthetic empathy to feel it, and then I can contrast the two and adjust my client's movement to help them be more successful in the exercise. What is in the body of the person you are observing? Assume the posture, gesture, or movement sequence of the person you observed and feel what it feels like to be in their movement pattern. You can compare or contrast. It may feel a little different to you in your body than it does to them in theirs, but it's a great step forward in understanding people. Remember, it's super important to recognize that your bodily experience is different from someone else's, so stay open-minded when you draw conclusions. Let me give you an example. When I was in middle school, I broke my arms so many times that my parents thought I had brittle bone syndrome. I didn't. I was just a klutz. But I've had the experience of a broken arm. I know in my body what it feels like to have a broken arm and go through the healing process. My husband also has the experience of a broken arm. He was in an accident in high school and broke his arm. So we both have that experience. But my experience as an elementary kid and his as a high schooler were very different experiences. Not only did we break our arms in different ways, he fell off a tractor and I fell off the monkey bars, but we have very different bodies, got different medical care and different support from family and friends as we healed. We both had the experience of breaking our arm, but they were two very different experiences. So don't assume that just because you've been through what someone else is going through, that you know exactly how they're feeling. Be open-minded. We all have vastly different lives, bodies, and histories. And the best thing you can do when making sense of your observations and using kinesthetic empathy is to remember that all life experiences are unique. Kinesthetic empathy is an excellent tool, but it's not a magic bullet. In 1992, at the University of Parma, a group of scientists discovered mirror neurons. If you haven't heard about mirror neurons, you could probably find a YouTube video where a neuroscientist or a researcher explains it much more eloquently than I ever could, but I did do my homework, and you're already here, so I'll do my best. Mirror neurons are a distinctive system of neurons that activate both when an individual executes a motor act, which is a movement, and when they observe another individual performing the same or a similar movement. It's kind of like movement telepathy. This system of neurons activates when we see someone else perform an action in the same way as if we were performing that action. If I watched my husband brush his teeth, my mirror neurons turn on as if I were brushing my teeth. If he watches me load the dishwasher, his mirror neurons turn on as if he were loading the dishwasher. This neurological system is the basis for kinesthetic empathy and also regular empathy, but we'll get to that next week. Let me read this quote to you. This is Out of Beyond Words by Moore and Yamamoto, which is a great book, and I highly recommend it. In this quote, they are referencing a study by Rizzolatti and Destro, which are two of the scientists who discovered mirror neurons. Mirror neurons, quote, appear to facilitate understanding the actions of others. They are thought to provide a basic mechanism for imitation and motor learning. Moreover, the mirror neuron system is hypothesized to provide the neurological basis for empathy, which is the capacity to feel the same emotions that others feel, end quote. There are lots of great articles on mirror neurons. I will link one in the show notes today. And then whatever else I find that I love, I'll just pop up on the Facebook page for you all. So now you're thinking, wow, what great tools. Now, how do I access mirror neurons and get aesthetic empathy? Let's have some fun with a little exercise. This is my favorite exercise for kinesthetic empathy. It's a little silly, but it's fun, and the insight you gain is invaluable. First, you'll need a partner and a fair bit of space to walk around in. If you can't find a willing adult, usually kids are up for this because it does feel really silly in the moment. But what you're going to do is you're going to follow your partner as they walk. They can go in any direction they want, change directions as needed, or even stop and start. You're going to follow several feet behind them and actively change your gait to match theirs. Give yourself enough distance behind them that you can easily see their whole body and try and keep that distance consistent. Then scan their body and take note of how they walk. Start at the hips and the waist. How is your partner moving their hips? Do their hips sway more than yours? What about their waist? Is their waist relaxed or tense? How much do the waist and hips move together? Copy that movement in your body to the best of your ability. Put their hip and waist movement in your gait. Keep that movement in your body and scan down your partner's legs. How do their knees move? Do they track straight forward? Do they go out to the side a bit? Does one knee track differently than the other? Put that in your body too. Keep it there while you scan down to your partner's feet. Are their heels hitting the ground when they step forward? Or is the front part of their foot hitting the ground first? How quickly do your partner's heels lift up as they travel forward? What direction are the toes going? Straight forward, out to the side, in a little bit? Are the feet going different directions? Put all that in your body and keep it in your body. I know at this point it is like rubbing your stomach and patting your head, but you got this. You can do it. Keep all that in your body and skip your gaze up to your partner's spine. How much tension is your partner holding in their spine? Is the spine from tailbone all the way up to the head very fluid, or is it stiff? Put that in your body too. Keep that in your body and take in the movement of the rib cage and shoulders. Do they look tilted to one side? How much are their arms swaying? Are the hands facing evenly in towards the body, or is one arm rotated out or in more than the other? Check out the head and neck. Adopt any tilting or bobbing that your partner might be doing while they're traveling along. If you can, go through the whole body a couple of times and double check your observations and your embodiment. Really feel their walk in your body physically. How does it feel? I did this with one of my friends who in general is much more loose and flexible than I am. And I remember thinking how completely different my entire worldview would be if I walked like her all the time. I felt like a completely different person. I tend to be really tense, really anxious, and always afraid, terrified of messing up. And that's how I live in my body. My friend lives in her body in a completely different way. So having her walk in my body was an interesting physical experience, but it also allowed me to feel what it would be like to be relaxed. Someday I'll be that relaxed after lots and lots of therapy. So that's a pretty labor-intensive way of accessing your kinesthetic empathy, but it's so much fun. Definitely after you've copied your partner's walk, switch roles and let them copy you. There are other things you can observe that are less labor intensive, like posture and gesture. I have a client who I adore, but that's not the point. He's tall. He's over 6 feet. And his wife likes to say that he has, quote, too tall syndrome because he frequently has to droop his head so that he doesn't run into things or like even so that he can see himself in the bathroom mirror. That one really got me, actually. They had their bathroom redone a few years ago, and they had the mirror placed in a higher than standard position so that he could see himself while getting ready in the morning. When they told me about that, I had to think, what would it be like to be that tall? So tall that when you look into a standard bathroom mirror, you see your waist and not your face. So what I did was I brought a reformer box, which is like a piece of Pilates equipment, into the studio bathroom, and I stood on it to look at myself in the mirror. And indeed, I could see my waist, but not my face. Also, I should probably dust the shelves more often, but I digress. Okay, so this client always comes in, sits down, leans back, raises one knee up, and clasps his hands around that shin every time he sits down. So one day, I tried that position on for size. It's not a position that I would normally sit in, but since he adopted it with such frequently, I wanted to try it on for size. I wanted to see what it felt like. First off, it's pretty comfortable. If you're having trouble visualizing it, I'll put a picture up on the Facebook page and the Patreon page so that you can see it. But the way the limbs are arranged allows the body to kind of be perfectly balanced out, almost like being suspended in a hammock. It's very relaxing. So that's something you could do. Observe how someone is sitting or standing and assume that posture. Look at the position they are in, assume the position, and also put tension in your body in the same places that they are holding tension and just feel what it feels like. The other simple thing you can do is put a gesture in your body. In my family, there's something we call the Ittings hand. Ittings is my maiden name. And the hand gesture is a controlled slashing gesture with the right forearm. It is always bound flow and direct, but with variations in time and weight. This is something that only my dad and I can do consistently the same way, but every other member of my family has tried to mimic it, mostly really to just make fun of us, which is totally fine. I'm going to video this and put it on the Patreon page. See if you can spot the difference between my hand movement and others' hand movement. And then try that gesture on for size yourself. Watch the video a couple of times, see how well you can mimic it. And then tell me what you think. Tell me how it feels. Another simple thing you can do to hone your kinesthetic empathy skills is to adjust your approach to your personal space. This is admittedly super uncomfortable for me, and I'd rather do almost anything else, but here it is. If your personal space bubble is permeable, which means you don't mind if other people come within close proximity to you, then try on non-permeable personal space. That's a mouthful. Then try on non-permeable personal space for size. If someone comes close to you, step away and increase the space between you both. If you normally have non-permeable personal space, then try letting someone in. Please be safe with this. Don't just let random strangers get all up in your space. I have non-permeable personal space. And when I let someone in, with the exception of my husband or kids, I feel super uncomfortable. And I have never been in a situation where I felt like I was in personal danger with anyone I was with. But when people stand really close to me, I literally can't focus on what they're saying because I am completely focused on trying to figure out why they are so close to me. So when I try permeable space on for size and I allow people to get closer to me, I dislike it immensely. But you might have a different experience. You might feel like all of a sudden you have a better relationship with whoever you let in. If you normally have permeable personal space, then try being more firm about your personal space boundaries. You might feel distanced, or you might find that you have a little bit more breathing room and you rather like it. Either way, you have an opportunity to experience and appreciate others' approach to their personal space. Now let's chat for a bit about how we might use body, effort, shape, and space to hone our kinesthetic empathy skills. If you narrow your movement parameters to the physical body, you will consider what parts of the body are moving. For instance, my grandpa was a lefty, so if I were to observe that he ate with his left hand or opened the door with his left hand instead of his right, I could try that on for size. You could also narrow your movement parameters to effort. What does it feel like to adopt the weight, space, flow, or time choices of someone else? Remember that effort is emotional and contagious because your mirror neuron system works here too. So take care of yourself. And if you get stuck in an emotional pattern that isn't working for you, take some deep breaths to reset. We haven't talked a lot about the concept of shape on the podcast yet. I should probably add that to my list. But you can generally assume the shape someone is making in their body and try it on for size. If that concept doesn't really resonate for you, don't sweat it. I promise we'll get more into depth on shape in a later episode. Lastly, you can adopt how someone moves in their kinesphere, their personal space. This is going beyond permeability to show where in our personal space the movement is happening. Everyone has a bubble of personal space around them, and it can be mapped in very specific ways. And if you use those maps, you can identify where someone is within that bubble and then try out those places in your kinesphere to see what it feels like. You can observe someone else's reach space, how close or far away from the body someone is reaching with their limbs. Or you can observe levels of movement, which would categorize if they are mostly low to the ground, like someone down on their knees pulling weeds, or working mid-level, which is like cooking, or high level, like reaching up to dust a ceiling fan. If you want more information on that, you can look at the free intro video where I explain it in person, or listen to, I think it's episode 2, which is Personal Space with Apples and Cake. But both of those will go more into those kinespheric maps. So after you've kind of mastered the feeling of putting someone else's movement in your body, you can take what you've learned through kinesthetic empathy and apply it to real life situations, coaching, relationships, parenting. Kinesthetic empathy and parenting is a really big concept that we'll cover in depth, probably in its own episode. But in the meantime, you can tune into your kids' movement and use kinesthetic empathy to give you insight into what they are feeling. Okay. I'm going to share this story with the caveat that I know better now. When I was little, I got one spanking. I don't remember what I did to earn that spanking. I was probably disobedient, but it was the 80s, so spanking was pretty commonplace. Regardless, I learned my lesson. I hated the spanking. I hated feeling like I had disappointed my parents, and I worked very hard to never warrant another spanking. If there was going to be a spanking success story, which shouldn't even be a thing, it was me. I got one spanking, the message got across, and that was the end of it. I learned not to cross my parents. That was my personal experience. Now, when one of my boys was little, maybe like 3 or 4, I spanked him. I don't remember exactly what for, but being young and stupid, I thought the way that my parents raised me was how all parents should raise all children, and that this one time my son needed a spanking and it would get the message across and he would never need another. I knew as soon as I spanked him that it was a mistake. My mirror neurons kicked in and I knew that what he was feeling wasn't what I had hoped for at all. He wasn't remorseful or contrite for whatever it was that he had done. Instead, he looked at me in a way that I can't fully describe, but I knew that I had severely damaged our relationship. Ooh, I might cry, guys. Okay, pulling it together. He was betrayed and he was hurt and he was sad. And he didn't tell me that. He felt it and my mirror neurons kicked in and I felt it too. That movement telepathy was crystal clear. And I was crushed. I knew right then and there I would never spank again. And I would just have to be creative with how I communicated with my son. It is over a decade later, and he is in high school now. And interestingly enough, he responds best to a suggestion or a request and shuts down completely in situations where someone is angry with him. So if I say, "Hey, do you mind taking the trash out at some point this evening?" The answer is always, "Sure, Mom." But in moments when someone is angry with him, he will shut down, and I see a flicker of that feeling of betrayal from when he was three. Every now and again, I get frustrated with him. And if I communicate in a harsh way with him, I always apologize. I'm the adult. I make mistakes. I need to apologize. I will also sometimes tell him that I'm frustrated and trying to calm down. My therapist says that this is okay. She says it's okay for your kids to see you struggle through a range of emotions. I'm not convinced. I would like to be perfect all the time, but my therapist says that this is fine. So I try to communicate with him in the calm way that he needs. And when I struggle, I am honest about the struggle. That's just one crossover example. I used kinesthetic empathy to understand what my son was feeling, and I adjusted accordingly. And now I know how to better interact with him. If he brings home a D on his report card, rather than yell at him to get his grades up, I'll ask, "Hey, bud, what can we do to get this grade up? Do you need help?" And he will honestly tell me if he needs help or not, and then keep me posted as he works to raise his grade. This is my 15-year-old son. I have three teenagers, and I have never had an attitude problem with any of them. And I attribute that mostly to paying attention to their body language and adjusting my body language accordingly. Does the D on a report card need attention? Absolutely, it does. But I'm flexible in how I approach the topic. I pay attention to my kids' body language and I can adjust my body language as needed. If I don't understand how they're feeling or what they're feeling or how they are moving, I will use kinesthetic empathy. I will put it in my body and feel what they're feeling the best that I can and then progress from there. Friends, that's kinesthetic empathy in a nutshell. The next episode will be my conversation with Dr. Deb Miller, which I'm really looking forward to sharing with you. As usual, if you have any questions, you can DM me on Instagram. I'm at Laurel Foley, or email me at laurel@fieldguidetobodylanguage.com. If you enjoy this episode, please leave me a review. I got a single review, yes, singular, review on Apple a couple weeks ago, and it was so kind that I cried a little. Thank you so much to whoever left me my first review. Thank you. Bye, friends.